This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Scott Greenberg. Look out your window right now, and you just might spot a dinosaur. And that's not a joke. It's science. Dr. Steve Brissotti is a paleontologist at the University of Edinburgh who spent his career digging up the ancestors of the creatures now singing in your backyard. He's named more than 15 new species, including a Tyrannosaur nicknamed, and I love this, Pinocchio Rex. And he serves as the paleontology advisor for the Jurassic World film franchise.
Steve is also a New York Times bestselling author. His book, The Rise and Fall of Dinosaurs, became an international sensation. Now he's back with a new book. It's called The Story of Birds, A New History from Their Dinosaur Origins to the Present, a 150-million-year journey from small feathered dinosaurs to the more than 10,000 bird species alive today. Dr. Steve Brissotti, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Lynn, Scott, happy to be here and excited to do what I love best, talking about dinosaurs, and in this case, the dinosaurs that still live among us today.
Such a great topic. Well, you know, here in Utah and the Intermountain West, we fancy ourselves armchair paleontologists because, as you know, just a couple of hours east of here is Dinosaur National Monument, the largest collection of dinosaur bones. But it's interesting on this show, we talk a lot about dinosaurs, but not about dinosaurs as birds. How did you come to this?
Well, I don't blame you for that, because out in Utah, you guys are right in the middle of the dinosaur epicenter of the world, really. I mean, Utah is one of the best places on the planet to find dinosaurs of all ages, really. Triassic dinosaurs, Jurassic dinosaurs, Cretaceous dinosaurs. You have such a vast state with so many mountains and so much exposed rock and so many national parks and other areas that are preserved that really it is, you know, a crown jewel in the world of paleontology. I grew up in Illinois. I'm not so lucky. Nobody's ever found a dinosaur bone in Illinois, but I'm surrounded by dinosaurs here, as are you in Utah and everybody around the world, because there are still dinosaurs among us, and we call those dinosaurs birds. And the birds that we know today, all 10,000 species, the birds we keep as pets, the birds that we see when we go bird watching, the chicken on your dinner plate, all of them are dinosaurs. They have descended from dinosaurs. They're part of the dinosaur family. Tree. They're just a strange group of dinosaurs that got small and grew wings and started to fly. They're the only dinosaurs, though, that happened to survive to the modern day. And this might sound radical, it might sound strange, but it's actually an idea that goes way back to the 1860s. Charles Darwin himself talked about this idea that today's birds evolved from reptiles through the dinosaurs of the primeval times. And nowadays we know that, yes, indeed, this is true. And I think, to me, it's just an astounding fact of nature that we still have dinosaurs among us, that we still have this link to the prehistoric past when we look at a sparrow, when we look at a parakeet, when we look at a robin, when we look at a roadrunner or a magpie or whatever it is, those are real dinosaurs.
I was trying to think this morning about the birds here amongst us that we see and can most readily identify as a dinosaur. And there happens to be a big flock right up near where Scott lives in Park City, wild turkeys.
Yes. And Park City, by the way, very beautiful. You know, I've been to Utah just a few times to study dinosaurs, you know, at the many of the museums at the Utah Museum of Natural History in Salt Lake City, and at a few of the other museums. And I've always loved Utah, and I've always taken time to try to drive around and spend some time out in nature and visit some of the parks. I love Park City. And I remember seeing wild turkeys out there. I know you have a lot of wild turkeys. We had them growing up here in Illinois, too. And, you know, they might not seem like the most ferocious of creatures, but if you get close to them, I think you can sense their inner dinosaur. I think you really can. I mean, they're pretty big. They can fly. They do fly, but they spend a lot of time on the ground. They have big feet. They have scales on their feet. Their feet really do look like the foot of a mini T-Rex when I look at them. And I just think they are one of those birds that when you do encounter them, they can be a bit feisty as well. They can be a bit territorial. I think you can sense that Velociraptor lurking deep in their genomes, much more so maybe than when we see a little songbird, a finch, a sparrow, something like that seems nothing like a T-Rex or a Velociraptor, but you see a wild turkey, I think you can sense that even more.
Absolutely. My neighborhood has been taken over by a roving gang of dinosaur turkeys. So.
Good luck here in Illinois. You know, I'm visiting my family. I live in Scotland. You know, I teach at the University of Edinburgh, which is a wonderful old university. It goes back to the 1580s, and I love it. I've lived in Scotland for a long time, and we have big flocks of rogue seagulls all around the city of Edinburgh. But here in Illinois, seeing my family, it's Canada geese. There are Canada geese everywhere, and they're pretty big. Some of them, you know, they come up certainly to your waist, up to your chest, and some of these flocks, there's hundreds of these things together. And again, I think in experiencing birds like this, when you think about that dinosaur bird connection and you look at a Canada goose, you look at a flock of Canada geese, you look at a flock of turkeys in your neighborhood, you do start to feel that. I think it becomes more real. And I think that does help us see modern day birds as these descendants of dinosaurs.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. You described seeing a feathered raptor skeleton in China as a life-changing moment early in your career. Why was that so impactful?
Yeah, we all get different epiphanies in life at different times. And for me, this one was a revelation. This was when I was in China. I went to China to study dinosaur fossils. I was a student. And I already knew by that point, birds are dinosaurs. You know, there's plenty of evidence for this. Again, it's an idea that goes back to the 1860s. It has been discussed and debated by generations of scientists. It's in the textbooks. It was in the textbooks when I was learning paleontology about 20 years ago, but still, it was a little bit abstract, this idea that today's birds are dinosaurs. When I went to China and I saw some of these fossils of real dinosaurs covered in feathers, these were the famous fossils that started to be discovered in the 1990s, fossils of dinosaurs that were buried by volcanoes. And so all the fine details were preserved, the feathers and sometimes the skin, sometimes some of the internal structure. And seeing some of these fossils of raptor dinosaurs, basically velociraptor types of animals, if you know Velociraptor from Jurassic Park, you know, absolutely bona fide, iconic dinosaurs, but seeing them covered in feathers and some of them even seeing wings on their arms made up of feathers, that just proved it to me in a way that nothing in a textbook or nothing in an academic paper ever could. Here was a dinosaur with feathers, with a wing. The connection to birds was so obvious, so crystal clear. And since then, I've been fascinated with birds and with the origin of birds and with how birds evolved from dinosaurs. And I ended up studying this for my PhD when I did my doctorate. My thesis was building a big family tree of the carnivorous dinosaurs, what we call the theropod dinosaurs, the T-Rex and Velociraptor group. That's the group that birds came from. And so my thesis was building a big family tree, putting birds in place, understanding their closest relatives and ancestors. And I've described different species of fossil theropods and including some from China with feathers that I've been very lucky to be invited to study by my friends in China. And so the culmination of all of that, I just felt, well, I should write a book about this. I love doing pop science books, and it felt like the time was right to do a book on birds. And that's where the story of birds, the new book, came out of.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about feathers. I mean, what had to evolve first? Was it feathers, wings, flight itself, or did they all sort of develop for reasons that had actually nothing to do with getting off the ground? I mean, why did these dinosaurs have feathers?
This is where the fossil record becomes so powerful, because fossils are clues from ancient history, from prehistory. Fossils give us a sense of the species that used to live and how evolution happened over time. Because if you look at the modern world, you look at birds, they're utterly distinctive. I mean, there's nothing at all similar to a bird, really. Okay, there's bats that fly and some insects that fly, but birds, You see a bird, you know it's a bird. Most birds can fly, okay, a few birds don't, like ostriches and emus and so on, but most of them fly. They fly with wings made of feathers. Nothing else in nature has anything that looks like a feather. A feather is so intricate, so beautiful, so perfectly adapted to forming these airfoil wings that birds use to fly. So you would think, looking at the modern world, that birds are so unique, so distinctive. They must have evolved quickly. There must have been some, you know, freak mutation millions of years ago where feathers and wings evolved and these birds started to fly. But the fossil record actually tells us it was a long, gradual process of evolution. And what came first were feathers. But the first feathers were very, very simple. And we see these feathers covering the bodies of many fossil dinosaurs. These feathers look like hair. They're just little strands, individual little bristles. And most dinosaurs had these kind of simple feathers. If you find them preserved in these settings where the soft bits are fossilized, we have meat-eating dinosaurs with these simple feathers, plant-eating dinosaurs with these simple feathers. A lot of little dinosaurs had these hairy feathers, but some big dinosaurs did too. There's a Tyrannosaur from China that weighed over a ton, that was 30 feet long, covered in feathers. So feathers actually go back really to the ancestor of all dinosaurs. And feathers were normal for dinosaurs, the same way hair is normal for mammals. But the feathers that were normal for dinosaurs were these simpler feathers. These were the way that feathers first evolved. And they looked like hair, and they probably functioned like hair. They probably were used in insulation to help these dinosaurs keep warm, control their body temperatures. No way these dinosaurs could fly with these little hairy feathers the same way we can't fly with our hair. So that's the first thing the fossil record tells us, is that feathers started as these simple structures and that many dinosaurs had them and that feathers did not first evolve for flight. But then the fossils tell us that some dinosaurs, the raptor dinosaurs, they elaborated those feathers. Whereas most dinosaurs kept these simple hairy feathers, the raptor dinosaurs and their close relatives changed those simple little hairs into brushes. They went from individual strands and they branched out. And then some of those brushes became more rigid, stronger. They lined them up on the arms. They took on the shape of quill pens. They became the classic feathers that form a wing that we know in birds today. But the surprise, the next surprise from the fossil record is that the very first wings show up on dinosaurs that are the size of sheep up to about the size of horses. And those wings are no bigger than my computer laptop screen that I'm speaking to you on now. So no way that if a dinosaur the size of a horse flapped a wing the size of a laptop screen, that it could get airborne. Just by the laws of physics, it wouldn't work. You couldn't get the lift, you couldn't get the thrust to be in the air. So we think that wings first evolved for other reasons too. And when we think about it, birds today use their wings for many things. Of course, they use their wings to fly, but they also use their wings to protect their eggs in the nest as a safety blanket. They use their wings to display to mates and to rivals. So we think maybe wings might have started as these advertising billboards to attract mates and intimidate rivals. And then later on, they were repurposed as airfoils as the wings got bigger and the bodies of some of these raptor dinosaurs got smaller. Just by the laws of physics, at some point, those display billboards would have generated a little bit of lift to get airborne, a little bit of thrust to move through the air. And in that sense, that's probably how flight evolved. Basically by accident, by happenstance, a side effect of these feathers that first evolved for insulation that were then modified into display structures, and then they took on this new function as a wing. And I know that might seem strange. We don't often think of evolution that way, as kind of coming together or things happening by happenstance. But look, when the Wright brothers invented the first airplane that got airborne, they put pieces together that other people had invented for other reasons. The Wright brothers did not invent the propeller. They didn't invent the wheel. They didn't invent the wing. They just put them together in a new way. And evolution did something similar with forging some dinosaurs into birds.
That's a great parallel. If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with paleontologist Steve Brusate. He is a professor and a researcher at the University of Edinburgh. But as you can tell by his accent, he's American from Illinois. He's written a new book called The Story of Birds, A New History from Their Dinosaur Origins to the Present. Okay, so these evolutionary features, feathers, wings, must have had something to do with why dinosaur birds survived the big asteroid that took out the dinosaurs.
Absolutely. This is the remarkable thing, that we have dinosaurs that still live today, but it's only the birds. The T-Rexes, the Triceratopses, the long-necked dinosaurs, the stegosaurs with the plates on their backs, the duck-billed dinosaurs, the armored dinosaurs. I'm naming all these dinosaurs that you guys have some of the best fossils in the world of in Utah. Those dinosaurs thrived for tens of millions of years, but they all disappeared 66 million years ago when this 6-mile-wide asteroid fell out of the sky and unleashed chaos. And the only dinosaurs that made it through were birds. And in fact, it was only some birds, because at the moment the asteroid hit, there already were birds. Birds had already evolved, and they had already diversified into lots of different types. And at that moment the asteroid hit, there were modern-style birds with beaks instead of teeth, with very lightweight skeletons, with big wings that grew really fast. But there were also still birds that looked a lot like their dinosaur ancestors, birds that still had teeth, birds that still had big claws on their hands, birds that still had long tails, birds that still took several years to grow from a baby into an adult. All of those other birds were wiped away with T-Rex and Triceratops. So the question really becomes, why did only these modern style birds make it through? And we certainly think that flying had something to do with it, being able to move around very easily when the world has gone crazy, when there's wildfires and earthquakes and tsunamis and the environment, you know, has just turned into a bad disaster film. I mean, being able to fly away from local danger would certainly help. But it couldn't be the entire story, because a lot of other flying animals died too. So there must have been other reasons. And we think that being able to grow really fast, so modern birds, usually when they hatch from an egg, I mean, you don't see a baby bird for very long. It becomes an adult within a few weeks, maybe a few months, and starts reproducing itself and laying its own eggs. So we think that being able to grow so quickly, reproduce so quickly, turn over the generations so quickly, that helps when the world is very chaotic. But also those beaks that modern birds have, they probably helped too, because those beaks allowed many of these birds to eat seeds, which, as we know today, many birds eat seeds. We put seeds in our bird feeders. It's just something we take for granted. But really, it's a kind of unusual diet to specialize in eating seeds. And it's hard to do it. But if you have a beak, a nutcracker beak, you can do it. Now, when the asteroid hit, the world was ravaged. And there were wildfires that swept across the land, burned down most of the forest. Then all the soot from the fires and all the dust and the grime from the asteroid itself went into the atmosphere, blocked out the sun. The earth went dark and cold, probably for many years. The forest basically collapsed. Most plants died. Plants would later come back. Why? Because of seeds. Because seeds last for a long time. And if you can eat seeds, you would probably have access to the last surviving food. So it wouldn't get you out of jail forever, but it was a get out of jail free card, at least for a while, to be able to eat seeds. So when you put the pieces together, being able to fly, being able to grow fast, reproduce fast, being able to eat seeds, the last surviving food source, all of those things probably added up to a good hand of cards that birds held, modern birds held, when the asteroid hit. And that's probably why they survived. And only 25% of species survived. 3 out of every 4 species totally died, went extinct when the asteroid hit. So the odds of survival across the board were very small, but birds had what it took, as did some little furry creatures with hair that lived in burrows, that grew fast, that were warm-blooded. They survived too. They were our ancestors. And that's why we have mammals and birds in the world today.
And it makes so much sense that you would want to study this, because birds exist in the world today. So other than, we've talked about the wild turkey, for example, what are some of the other backyard birds that we should now look upon as dinosaurs?
The amazing thing to me is that every bird in the world today is part of the dinosaur family tree, the same way every bat in the world today is part of the mammal family tree. Bats are mammals. They evolved from other mammals. They have hair and feed their babies milk, and they have all the classic features of mammals. So we really should think of every single bird we see as a type of dinosaur. Now, some don't look very dinosaurian at all. You know, when you see a tiny little hummingbird, that thing looks nothing like a T-Rex. But to me, that's fascinating because that shows the great diversity of the dinosaur family. It shows the evolutionary flexibility dinosaurs have had, the potential that dinosaurs have realized, having this diversity that spans from little hummingbirds the size of bees, which are the smallest birds in the world today, all the way up to these earth-shaking long-necked giants that weighed more than a Boeing 737 airplane. To have that kind of diversity in the dinosaur family, that's just astounding. And it speaks to just that evolutionary capability and potential and success of dinosaurs. But I think, you know, when you look at a hummingbird, you don't see a dinosaur. But I really do think when you encounter things like wild turkeys, yeah, you see it. When you encounter a hawk, an eagle, a vulture, something like that, you know, you sense kind of that primeval carnivorous life of a T-Rex or a velociraptor. But I think if you really, if you're still, you know, people, if you're listening out there and you still doubt this connection between dinosaurs and birds, it still sounds kind of weird. Go to a zoo, look at a cassowary, if you're able to, or just go online. There's lots of videos of cassowaries. They live in Australia, but they're pretty gentle birds if you stay away from them. But they're big birds. They don't fly. They're in the same family as the ostrich and the emu. And cassowaries, they basically stand about as tall as we do. And they have these big legs with scales all over their legs. They have three big toes, again, covered in scales, big claws at the end of each toe. If you just saw the foot of a cassowary and it was cropped out of a photo, you didn't know what it was, you would think, I promise you that most of us would think that's a dinosaur. That's a dinosaur model on display at some museum. But no, these are modern day birds. And cassowaries, they're feisty. They'll kickbox you. They'll chase you down if you mess with them. They really look like dinosaurs that forgot to die. So if you doubt this connection, go online, look at some videos of cassowaries in Australia. And if you're able to, go to a zoo and just watch that cassowary, and you will get the connection between dinosaurs and birds.
Well, forget cassowaries. I was in Australia and got chased by an emu once. And let me tell you, those things are dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, velociraptor.
They're plenty scary. Ostriches in Africa as well, they're really the real sprinters of the African savannah. They are incredible. Yeah. And I think when you think about this dinosaur bird connection, it just makes you see the world and nature today in a slightly different way. You just make that connection with things of the past. And I think that's the most interesting and cool thing about this dinosaur bird link.
Look, we could go on and on. This, your enthusiasm is infectious. I absolutely love this, but I can't let you go without asking this. You're the paleontology consultant for the Jurassic World franchise. So how do you, as a scientist, balance the accuracy of what's actually scientific versus what makes a good blockbuster?
One of the coolest things I've gotten to do is work on a few of the Jurassic World films. I worked on Jurassic World Dominion and most recently on Jurassic World Rebirth. And my job is a consultant job. I'm the paleontology consultant. So I'm there to, anytime the director, the writers, the artists, anytime they have questions about dinosaurs, they can come to me. And so we have a lot of discussions. I just tell them stuff. I give them advice. I let them know what we know about the real fossils, the real dinosaurs. And in practice, we just have lots of calls, lots of chats. They show me lots of drafts of the artwork as they're developing the dinosaur characters, and they ask for my feedback, and I, you know, try to make sure that the real science is always in the ears of the creative geniuses making these films. And it's really cool. I mean, I never thought I'd be working on these films. I'm a huge fan of the franchise. I mean, I remember seeing the original film in the cinema when I was 9 years old with my dad and with my brothers, and it was because of the Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, a book I wrote back in 2018. That's why I got to do it. So the director of Jurassic World, Colin Trevorrow, he was starting to write the new film. He was doing some research. He was reading dinosaur books. He read my book and reached out, got in touch. He came to Edinburgh with his family for the big Fringe Festival, the big arts festival we have in Scotland in August. And we met up and hit it off. And he invited me to work on the films. And it's been a lot of fun. And look, they're Hollywood blockbusters. I know that. These are summer monster movies. The most successful ones, they make over $1 billion at the box office. They're entertainment. They're not nature documentaries. So I know that. But I know that my role is to make sure that the people making the films know as much as possible about the real dinosaurs. And throughout all seven films of the franchise, for over 30 years, they've always been very good about using real dinosaurs, about taking the advice of scientists. They've always had science advisors on the film. And I respect that because, you know, a monster movie, a sci-fi movie, they don't need to have scientists involved, but the Jurassic Park franchise always has. And, you know, hopefully they always will. We'll see what comes next with the franchise.
This has been absolutely fascinating. I think we could, Lynn, I think we could just keep going on and on. And I'm so sorry that we're running out of time. But Steve Brusatte, thank you so much for being here. You are the author of the new book here called The Story of Birds, A New History from Their Dinosaur Origins to the Present. I got to tell you, it's a 150 million year journey and really well worth the read. And now I will never, ever look at birds the same way.
Where are those turkeys in your neighborhood? Think of them as a pack of velociraptors and beware. No, they won't treat you that bad, but you see it.
Yeah, I'm still going to wear my running shoes just to be safe. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
for
guys.
Being here on Cool Science Radio. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.